So the topic this morning is the world has suffered enough. And it's a chapter 9 from the Essential Ernest Holmes book that we're studying. And in it, Ernest talks about suffering and evil and the looking out at the world and dealing with what we see. The pain in our own lives, the experience of pain in the lives of others, and the suffering people actually experience. It's reality, in a sense. We see that, and then we wonder, and we have to deal with it. How do we deal with it? It's been said that witnessing the tragedy of others is actually more painful than experiencing tragedy yourself. Because the physical body has defense mechanisms. If you suffer enough pain in a car accident, you'll become unconscious, ultimately leave your body, and witness your body from afar, in a near-death experience, perhaps. And I've read stories where they say, I saw this woman lying in agony on the ground, and I felt such compassion for her, and suddenly realized it was me, and I was fine. The essence of suffering in some ways is the witnessing of pain and feeling unable to do anything about it. Another definition for suffering for me is that pain plus tension or resistance equals suffering. And I have stories in my own physical life of being in pain and tensing against that pain. And discovering that in the tension, everything became painful. Even things that weren't causing me pain became painful because of the holding on. Excuse me. And one time I gave David a bumper sticker that said, change is inevitable, suffering is optional. And so I think change plus resistance equals pain. If we don't accept what is, if we don't assume value in what's happening, then we suffer. If we can learn to say to ourselves, as I do all the time about myself and other people, even when it looks like something's going wrong, it's actually something in the process of going right. I can relax within the experience and not resist it, not tense against it, but allow the change to happen, to flow with what is. Ernest Holmes said, there is nothing to be disintegrated or reintegrated, but only a wholeness to be revealed that has always been there. The way I usually say it is, we are not trying to become something we're not, but to recognize something we already are. We're learning to perceive what we already are. The wholeness of God is right here and right now. Ernest said, loose the boundaries of your sense of self and let in more spiritual territory. See yourself from a broader perspective. Look at life as a bigger picture. And ultimately recognize that there is no death, that life is eternal, that love is omnipresent, and that there is no endedness in the sense that we've come to believe. We sometimes push against death so hard that we're afraid to live. And life is about flow and ease and grace and relaxation and moving into that willingness to allow the changes to happen. To not tense against them, to not resist them, but to allow the flow of life. And in my meditation, I often hear the phrase, the team changes as the terrain changes. And I had an experience of it this week when I picked up my physical address book that I don't use as much anymore because I have most of my current stuff electronically. And I looked through this book that's stuffed with papers that covers decades of my life now, from when I lived in Colorado and worked at a nonprofit from when I moved to Virginia and worked at several for-profit companies. And when, you know, my second husband died, when I married my third one, all of the changes, all of the people, all of the life that has shifted, and so many people that I've loved who come and gone in my life and yet ever been replaced by someone new, someone different, someone beautiful, someone even better suited to be my spiritual partners in my life today. And so that endless unfolding, that ease of transition that takes place when I simply let go and accept what is and recognize that change is going to happen, movement is going to happen. As I was writing the other day, I wrote the phrase, love moves. Love wants to move. There is always movement in love. Love flows. Love flows from people to other people. Love flows from us to the divine and from the divine back to us. Love moves, and we move with it. As we deepen our experience of love, we are able to move into situations that would have been so difficult for me in the past that I find becoming easier and easier because I approach them with less resistance. I don't judge them in the way that I did before. And over the past month or so, a friend of mine has been doing home hospice care with her sister for her brother who was dying. And it took 6 weeks for him to go through the final stages of his life. And he was extremely ill during that time, and at times not functional or in seizures or in not breathing well or deeply drugged. But in between those times, he had his lucid moments when he wanted to go to a bookstore or visit a favorite overlook or see something incredibly beautiful or be with someone or listen to a particular piece of music. And he was flowing with his life, and he was not resisting his death. He was open to possibilities. And the most touching thing about his story to me is that in those moments of the final days of his life, he was still giving of the fullness of his being. And what he had more than anything of in those final days, he had faith. And so he found himself inspired to pray with people he met everywhere he went, strangers and family members, and his family around him. My friend got ill one night, and her brother was praying with her for her health. And she said it was such an amazing experience to move beyond seeming barriers of different religions and philosophies and ways of being into the place where the angels sang for them together. And one of her brothers, she asked for a sign in a very cold, dark night. And the next thing that happened is one of her older brothers, who was fine, walked through the room and sang the phrase, "Just call me Angel of the Morning." Mm-hmm. And he marveled after it later because he said, "I haven't heard that song in 20 years or 40 years. I don't know how old it is." But suddenly the inspiration was there in that moment. And this man was praying because his fullness came through the prayer. And really the most powerful tool I know to live life fully is to give from our fullness, to give of what we have most of. And I was with a friend a couple of weeks ago who had just received a serious diagnosis that was pretty scary. And we had spent the evening together and had been flowing. When we were driving back, I said, "If you'd like, I'd say a prayer for you." And I said, "I have this little recorder. I can record it and email it to you." And so I sat with her and I said a prayer and recorded it and was going to email it to her. And when she got out of the car, she said, "You know, it's so awesome that you gave me those words." And I was just overwhelmed, because if I have an abundance of anything, it's words. I am word rich. I flow words all day, every day. And for someone to want to listen to my words, for someone to appreciate the gift of who I am flowing in the abundance of what I have most to give, was such a gift to me. It was a recognition of her, of the value of who I am in her life. And what a remarkable thing that is. What do we have an abundance of that we give? You know, we can give of our time, we can give of our smiles. Often we think about giving of our abundance and our money, but there are so many riches in our lives beyond the abundance of money. That's a wonderful thing. I'm grateful for it, and I'm certainly grateful for all the people who give to the study group so we can have great music and meet in a hotel. But the truth is that we give by our presence. We give by our being willing to be who we are, full out, as whole as we know how to be today, trusting that that gift of the divine within us is limitless. The potential for who we are, the potential to be expressed and developed, just blows me away, because that infinite nature exists within each of us. We are not the finite clumps of whatever earth that we walk around as in our physical bodies. Our physical bodies are the body of God in motion on the planet. Our emotions are guidance from Source, telling us how we're doing. Our minds are connected with the one mind. We are fully available to Spirit in every moment as we open our hearts, as we allow our minds to quiet, as we listen to that divine energy moving through us. It is always here. Love and God and life are omnipresent. There is nowhere God is not. They are right here, right now, as us. That energy of life, that infinite energy of life that is so huge, so powerful, so big, it's right here. We have only the limitation of our thoughts that don't allow it to flow, that keeps us from being in that fullness of that grace, of that light, of that holy glory all the time. So what is it? How do we do it? Ernest said in the Science of Mind textbook, "In our ignorance of the truth, we have misused the highest power we possess. And so great is this power, so complete is our freedom in it, so absolutely the domain of law through it, that the misuse of power has brought upon us the very conditions from which we suffer. And so we suffer, not because suffering is imposed on us, but because we are ignorant of our true nature. Man's nature is the same as God's nature. We should have no intellectual difficulty in realizing that an infinite intelligence could not make an automatic individuality. And this explains why man suffers on his road to self-discovery. His suffering is not God-ordained, because he creates his own experience as he becomes individualized. The universe does not demand suffering. Suffering is man-made through ignorance. Someday we shall decide that we have had enough suffering." And so that's what this chapter is about. It's about deciding that the suffering is about to end right here and now. And the person I have control over, the only one of us here that I have control over, is this one. It's me. I came here to be love. As me. Love is Connie, uniquely expressing. Each one of us is love, spirit as love, uniquely expressing as us. We each have a unique constellation of gifts. We each have a personal history, a biography and a biology that makes us unique in all the universe. And we each have a gift to give, or many gifts to give, from our overflow as we live in peace within ourselves. But we have to find the peace first in this space where we look out and we see the pain, we see the suffering. And how do we do that? How do we find the peace within ourselves? And I talk about this a lot in my new books. And one of the things that the Beloved told me early on is I heard some sirens one night. And I said, is there anything I can do? I call the Beloved B. I said, is there anything I can do, B? And they said, send our love. Send our love to those who are having an emergency tonight. Send our love to those who are answering that emergency. Send our love to those who are witnessing what is happening. Send our love to those who are running away because the police are coming through the neighborhood. Send our love to everyone. Send our love. And then they went on to say, when I translated that from my perspective, is so I am to send your love to those, all of those individuals. They said, no, our love. Your love is a part of our love. Your opening your heart to the divine love flowing through you is adding your personal perspective to that love. And I've heard so many times from Abraham Hicks that all of us have access to the divine, but it's actually easier to experience the divine energy from another person, because we have to tune to the frequency of the divine. We have to be in love to experience the frequency of love from source. But we can experience the experience of love from other people at a grounded physical frequency that's easier to access. So as we find our own love and allow that universal to flow, love to flow as us, we are bringing love, we are pouring love into the human consciousness, the vibration of humanity. And I believe that's the greatest change we can make in the world, is to bring love and our experience of divine love to places where the love shines already and to places where it doesn't necessarily shine yet. And I was talking to B about war. And they said to me, sending our love is really tuning and turning your attention to our love in the context of a certain person, place, or situation. By your attention to it, you call our love into greater manifestation in the physical reality where you can perceive and see it in some way. How do you perceive love, see? They asked me. I said, well, in my usual way, I feel a warmth in my heart and mind. I feel gentle, kind, and caring. I feel relaxed. I breathe easy. There's a quiet sense of ease and rightness about it. They said, good description, see. Now imagine being able to perceive love in a war zone. What would you sense there? I said, I can see a mother gently brushing her daughter's hair. I can feel a couple falling in love. I can see a soldier receiving a care package from home. I can see a doctor sewing up a wound with utter concentration and knowing. I can see an elderly couple lighting a candle and praying together. I can smell dinner cooking. I can see a man teaching several children to read. I can hear music at a wedding celebration. I can hear a new mother singing a lullaby. I can feel a thirsty person drinking a glass of water with deep appreciation. B said, you really got into that, see why? I said, well, once I got rolling, it just came to me. I've thought about this before, about the remarkable capacity of human beings to adjust and live life under extreme conditions. It's a powerful testament to the human spirit. And B said, and to our love, could you give me some Kleenex? And to our love, see, Our love is ready to burst out in any moment someone invites it in. Remember that song going through your head, "Can anybody find me somebody to love?" You all want that from the deepest core of your being. You all look to express the love that you are. You are love. And you experience a divine discontent within you if your love, our love, within you is not allowed to flow. So it pops out everywhere. Remember your father and his war buddies. I said, yes, they remained his friends for his whole life. B said, there is a bonding, a camaraderie that takes place amid dangers that is sublime. In extreme conditions, contrast makes people appreciate even a little bit of kindness. That level of appreciation moves mountains. It's like life in high definition. People don't forget it once they've experienced it. I said, wow, B, that's amazing. I used to just think of horror or terror when I thought of war. B said, it's there, Con, but it doesn't help you to think of that. What helps is to amplify the love, to imagine our love finding moments to burst forth into beautiful bloom, even there in the wreckage. Contemplate the resourcefulness and resilience of cultures who manage to survive even in places where war has continued for centuries. Thinking of pain and suffering doesn't relieve it. Contemplating tenderness, caring, and kindness, there's a healing balm. Our love can manifest more easily through your focus of attention. That's unconditional love. Imagine the people loving each other, appreciating life, getting great new ideas, following their impulses to give, and taking inspired action. I said, okay, B, I can do that. They said, that's sending our love. I said, cool. So, non-resistance. Finding the love within whatever it is that we're contemplating is so powerful because we get to choose our focus of attention and we get to suffer with what we're witnessing by our resistance to it and judgment about it, or we get to choose again and focus on finding those things within it that express love. And love is omnipresent. By our looking for it, we have to find it because it is always there. It is always there in some form we may never have contemplated before, but until we open to the possibility of it and look for it, we will never see it. We have to open to the possibility. The possibility of love is omnipresent. That is the truth. B said to me, everything is unfolding beautifully. Keep breathing and relaxing. There is no hurry for anything here. You already have everything you need for now. You will always be guided to what you need and to where your greatest joy will be in the future. Keep relaxing into ever-deepening trust. I have cards with these sayings on them to give to you to take home because these are the quotes that bring me the most comfort today. The other one is from my friend Ann Clark Roberts, who started with a line from one of my visions, which partly is why I'm so inspired by what she said. But I love being quoted. Every author does. The first line of what she said is, the need for battle is an illusion. And then she said, thanks, Connie. She said, I do not have to control or manipulate circumstances. I do not have to think too hard. I do not have to convince anyone to do it my way. I do not have to struggle to hold my grip. I can let go. Because if it doesn't go the way I hope, it could turn out better than I expected. I will know when to act because I will not feel afraid. I am in a good place. It feels like things are about to shift. I don't have to make the shift happen. I can just watch it happen. And once again, stand in awe of this amazing universe and of my incredible power as a deliberate creator. So I'm grateful to Anne, and I'm grateful to Ernest, and I'm grateful to the beloved, and I am grateful to Abraham Hicks, and all of those who have reminded me over and over again that there is always something to find in every situation that amplifies the love. So that's my solution to why the world has suffered enough. Because I no longer participate in the suffering. I've opted out of witnessing the suffering, and I've chosen to witness the love. Thanks.
Thank you.